Out in the dark, with the radio spark, meet me where the most light falls. You're listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Tune in, turn on, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Hello, and welcome to the first edition of Where the Most Light Falls, where we explore the arts with a focus on poetry. Who knows what else we'll get into along the way. All thanks to the remarkable Raymond, who has had the courage to send me out into the world unshackled. I'm Tamara, and I will tell you more about me as we go along, but I'm a poet and a writer, and I welcome you to visit my website called Sylvia's Daughter Says at tamaramiles.wixsite.com/Sylvia's Daughter Says. My idea for this show, Where the Most Light Falls, is to celebrate poetry, and not only the well-known poets, but the lesser-known poets, which would include me and a lot of my friends, but also might include you. So if you're out there in the audience listening, I would like to see your poetry. If you'll send me something at my Facebook poetry page, just ask me to be friends, and then in the message part, send me your poem. I'm at tamaramiles.poet. Also, you can reach me at Twitter. It's Tamara Miles, SC, as in South Carolina. So TamaraMilesSC. And you can reach me at Twitter, and I will get in touch with you if I believe I can use your poem on the air. Now, the way this show is going to work is we're going to have a little music playing in the background during the readings. And today I'll do the readings, but on future shows, I'd love to have some guest readers as well. And I'll be looking into that in the coming weeks. Now, the name for the show came from a poem that I wrote called Where the Most Light Falls, about a mirror-like structure in the back of a whale's eye that allows more light in. So maybe you'd like to hear that to sort of get things going. In the background, we'll be hearing the music to the movie The Hours, and the music is by Philip Glass. Where the Most Light Falls. The mirror at the back of a whale's eye, that massive monocle on each broad side, allows more light into the aperture, so the underwater view becomes more sensitive, more pure. Its curvature a window that never fully closes. The eye alerts to the human diver's poses and turns to watch him open wide in the deep and ambient light of ancient lore. The whale may in fact skyhop to see once more the human watching from the boat side, then form as it lowers its window shade, a kind of smile, and parts the sea as it did before. And for a while, the ocean-going Moses hides itself from human eyes and sinks in salty tears to soar. One of the ways that I decided to celebrate the lesser-known poets was to pull out my literary journals. You know, I have dozens of these because I've been a contributor, or I've tried to contribute to various journals over the years, and some of these I've been lucky enough to have a poem in or another piece of writing. But the poets that are in these literary journals sometimes only see the light this one time, or only rarely they have their work published in a literary journal, and after that people don't hear their poetry again. So I'd like to feature today a couple of poems from Soundings East, which arrived in the mail to me yesterday. Escapes. Praise for the 7 chimpanzees at the Kansas City Zoo who fashioned a ladder from branches. Praise for the 8 monkeys in Brazil who used stones to smash open a lock. We need more penguins who slide over 13-foot walls to plunge into Tokyo Bay. Let us follow the example of Ken Allen, the orangutan, who let himself out of 3 difficult enclosures, then taught his friends how to open their own gates. I want to be the bobcat who leapt out of his habitat, man-made wall, man-made moat, to lie beside a singing tree. A marvelous poem by the Claire Keyes Poetry Award winner for this year, and her name is Faith Sharon. Faith has several other poems in this same journal, one of which is called Darwin's Daughter. You'll notice that I'm choosing poems that celebrate nature very often on this program, because that's where I think we may need to spend more of our time. Darwin's Daughter by Faith Sharon. On the Galapagos Islands, Darwin balanced on the backs of giant tortoises, began noticing variations, the way finches were different at each port. It is said that he lost his faith when he lost his daughter Annie, who liked to look up words in dictionaries. Her finger drawn to names on maps. She was 10 when she died that late April day. Darwin's Theory of Evolution, written but still unpublished. Sundays, during his later years, he went walking in the forest while his family sat in church. He believed all life was related, descended from a common ancestor, and he studied his samples of plants and animals, kept a yellow notebook, had a single daguerreotype of his daughter in which she did not smile, a basket of flowers in her lap. He was a scientist, and he wrote his memories of Annie, folded them into a labeled box. He described how she touched his hair, how she sat in his study, comparing 2 editions of the same book, word by word. Thank you. In the same journal, Soundings East, there's a wonderful poem called Poem for Those of You Reading or Listening to This Right Now. And I thought that would suit us very well. The poet's name is Matt Zambito. Folks, we've got a real situation here. If you're not reading or listening to this poem right now, I honestly don't want to know what gross thing you're doing to it instead. And like I was going to be saying, you're as good as dead, and you know it, and I know it. And it's like a gosh darn hidden time bomb, this knowing that at this rate you're going to run out of a smorgasbord of cannabis soon, and also life. Folks, we could get into the politics of love in the United Arab Emirates, but let's save that for another time and instead say, well, how about those marigolds? And you'd be right. They pull it off. They're orange popping so ridiculously exact it makes a dictionary's definition of the color read like crime fiction. They croon the hue like a tune from a musical. And we could sing like that too, if we could finally all agree the catchiest words are all any of us could ever hope to organize. Folks, I swear to Anonymous, in the name of gravity, we could sing like that if we made of our lives a song. The next poem is one of my own, called Beach Crisis. Due to Hurricane Joaquin, Folly Beach is short of sand. The shore's receding hairline means the waves that took the sand away now hold a greater sway on homes. The threat of wash away has grown. But the problem has a bigger span, affecting marine organisms on hand and the whole intricate ecosystem. Remedies must be specific to the site. To intervene means adding sand compatible with what is known to fit it right. Not just any sand will do. A number of man-made structures, one is called a groin, may keep sand from traveling out and for a season keep the beach true. But in the long term, this fails too, because further down, the beach is starved. The seawalls that we carve eventually cause even faster erosion. Sand goes out to sandbars and may not come back again. The beach is changed for good and in slow motion. We'd stop erosion if we could, but storms will come again and interrupt our plans. The beach was not made for humans, nor was time, whose shore fades more quickly with demand, so that the waves of hours and days approach the end of our means and ways and leave us where we land. I stand upon the shore, an hourglass in hand, and say to myself and all the ocean, a hurricane he is. My heart his waves command. No cure for love, nor passing time. I too am a little short of sand. I'll put no shoreline armor up, and no protective dredge or dam. I'm very lucky to know some wonderful poets who have yet to be published, but whose day is coming soon. And I would count it a privilege to read to you a poem by my friend, Melissa Steffi. It's untitled. Our light filtered through the prism is technicolor bright. Each band is a phrase we say, a moment, a thought, a feeling. Colors and sounds passing through us, blending into blinding brilliance. Sometimes we forget the freshness of the magic, and then a touch or a look or a word reawakens such sleeping beasts that roar and spit fire and fly in such broad, sweeping patterns that we make pictures in the sky like the fireworks on the 4th of July. I like this poem especially well because July 4th is one of my favorite holidays, and I have memories of fireworks kisses. Maybe you do too. Melissa and I met in a group called That Curious Love of Green. It was started by the wonderful Irish writer Jane Barry, and she brought us together to do a creativity boot camp online. Jane was very generous to us, and it was free, and we gathered together, and for about 2 weeks we wrote and we painted and we sang and we cooked and we gardened, and we did just about any other thing we could think of that was creative. And all we really had to do was write about what we had done. And for several of us, it has had a remarkable impact on our creative lives and on our body of creative work. The group is still unfolding. Jane has got some other things going on in her life and has not been able to stay with us in the group, but we still go by the name that she gave it. And we're continuing to grow, and we would love to have you join us. We're at Friends of That Curious Love of Green. You can find us on Facebook and just send a membership request, and I will take a look at it. Another one of the poets that I adore in That Curious Love of Green is the Northern Irish poet, Mark Burns. And I'd like to read for you now his poem, The River Foyle. In the soft elbow of the River Foyle, bending left at the curve of the divided city, and its gasping mouth swallowing and returning endlessly the chimed Atlantic, the canopy of the oak-lined banks reflect glassily a mirror unbreathlessly, that does not shimmer or shake, moves neither this way nor that. On its surface, nothing moves, not even the wake of a mallard, though underneath tumble and turn, silt, mud, the heaviness of hearts. A poem by Carol Alexander. Her poem was published also in Soundings East, and it's called Scan. Coral arch through which spiny fatal fish swim, their gold frills dazzle underneath the skin. Seen through, I skim myself, the absence I will become. My city lying deep beneath the sea, I mouth the urchin's olivaceous chocolate brown. Hungered horizon, centuries rise and round you. Body, endangered reef, history, Adam's rib. Subdural myths we telltale, secrete within the skull, and salt shrivel upon the Dead Sea. Memory of the dying snake, reticulated spine, recalibrate. Think of femur heap, an eyeless gaze, ivory piano keys. Here is calcined mountain ridge, strafed by the stripped sun. Laying down bone, I've built stalactite towers, and once I held you, frail echinoderm, in a cage of bone. A poem from my mother called Gestures. My mother turned my bed down and put on the lamp when, as a teenager, I rambled late. We learn of love in simple gestures, a setting of the clock for 10 more minutes sleep, the waiting up after a date, a tray with warm tea, a treasured tiny spoon, the not forgotten milk and sugar in lavender or mint. Sheets and chairs for camp, a low-flung tent. The kneeling down and peering in, the low, slow crawl to join us with a flashlight in the cool blackout of the living room. The natural accompaniment of a blanket and a night owl snack. But first, before play, before the time consumed, love meant the children's room at the library, my arms full of books, the climbing in the car, the radio on 1972. I started reading on the way. The book was an early lamp, and Mother, you were too. I'd like to read for you a poem by another friend in my creativity group. Her name is Claire. It's called Change. I passed trees, tall, dignified, shedding their autumn dress of golden leaves, showing their bark, raw and vulnerable, naked to the elements, stripped back to the rawness of political truth, elegant, stately, gracefully bending with the autumn breeze. A winter sun glows brightly, bringing little warmth but welcome light on this gray day. A chill wind kisses my cheek. I gather my scarf around my neck, pulling my hat firmly down to brace against the changes that may come. Change is in the air. Winter hides behind the door to open the frost and Christmas snow. The closing of the year should bring hope with the starting of a new year. Let nations welcome peace. Let every man choose to see the light. When spring leaves of green cover our trees once again, let humanity rise up, cover the bare bones of dissent, and bring back sanity to the world. Oh, it is our great hope, isn't it, that every man and woman would choose to see the light. I'm turning now to a collection of poems by a well-known Irish writer, poet John Sexton, and I'm reading from his book, The Offspring of the Moon. The poem is called If Any, after Eugenio Montale. If any have confused you with the fox, it will be due to that magnificent jump, for the flying in your step joins as much as separates. It agitates each lump of grit in the stony path, your terrace, the streets near the Cotolingo meadow, the birch tree that quivers at the mere trace of me, happy, humble, rotted hollow. Or perhaps only for the luminous wave that oscillates from your almond eyes, for the shrewdness of your feigned surprise, for the hurt of your childish touch, torn feathers so easily loosened with love. If men have confused you with a mere carnivore, to the treacherous savant beneath fern, but, and strangely, never likened you more to that cunning fish torpedo, certain. It is possible that the mindful blind did not discern the blossomed wings sprouting from your shoulders, and that the mindful blind did not interpret the omen glowing in your forehead, the groove that I have scratched there in blood, cross, chrism, enchantment, death, a prayer meaning both perdition and salvation. If they did not have the skill to reckon you between a weasel or a woman, then with whom can I share the revelation? Where shall I bury the gold I sweat out, meddled in the cold furnace of my heart, when, turning from the high stairs, you depart? I had the pleasure of meeting John Sexton in Cork City, Ireland last year. A kind soul, and I appreciated his support when I did my first public reading there in Ireland. You know, we are all myth makers. Each poem, each novel, each work of art has embodied its own unique creation myth. It's the start of a new world pieced together from imagination. We're all writing our own myths. Yesterday I watched a large winged bird soar above while I was in the pool and thought to myself, what if the water is the same as the sky? And with every lap, the bird and I are both swimming and flying. I'll read a poem now by a friend from the Philippines. Her name is Marichi Garcia. She is also a member of That Curious Love of Gray. Marichi is an incredibly gifted artist, and I'll tell you more about her. Frenzy. It's been a while, and this old woman grins like a foolish girl, drunk on love, intoxicated on dreaming. Caution thrown to the treacherous, capricious wind, like the frenzy of shedding clothes in the grip of desire. Everything is like new again, as if nothing has ever been broken, as if nothing has ever been lost. Full circle to innocence, now seated with wisdom, that arduous journey into 1,001 deaths. I learned a new phrase today, sangue, which I lay carefully beside Daisuke, still sparkling new, unused. Next, I'd like to share with you a poem by another fellow I met at a poetry reading in Ireland. This one was in Belfast, and the young man's name is Adam Crothers. I'm reading from his book called Several Deer. This is called Form. Should you make too much love, you'll have the rest and sandwiches tomorrow. God takes the very best. He takes his form at last, the form of grapes, pressed for time and running like how fire escapes. Milky little schoolgirl, strawberries and dream, cream filling in a case of cream, I'm well aware of how it seems. Even if this pool of fromage frais could bone up to a fist, Jesus would never want me for a new formalist. I don't do we. And I'd ask you to join me, but well, democracy is hell. Instead, let's argue through a wall. Your friends haven't done anything new lately, and I'm your best friend, evidently. For more, see the buttocks and the butter churn, the churn stomach mess, where I dropped an anvil, horn first, on the sleeping hare. I mentioned earlier in the show that I'd just come back from Tampa. Well, while I was there, I visited Ybor City. And walking down the sidewalk there, I met a young man who worked for Greenpeace. And he reached out to me and we started a conversation. And I told him, as I've told so many people, well, I've got a poem about that. And we laughed, but I did have a poem that mentioned Greenpeace. And it's a poem called The Whale Evangelist. And I said, I'll send it to you, because I really believe that poetry needs to be given away, needs to be shared. So here's The Whale Evangelist. In 1970, Humpback Whales produced their first gold record, Antiphonal, a Spiritual Experience. Greenpeace took the mysterious sirens out to sea on loudspeakers to fall like prophecy on whaling vessel crewmen, momentarily stunned and silent before they carried on with the slaughter. The songs are patterns of pulse and play, melody and echo, call and response. The whale evangelist swoons us with his sermon love song, and in a sedated chorus revolving around a turntable on the axis of the world, we hum up a holy being from the right parietal lobe, pew of the brain's God spot, lit with spindle neurons. Surprise, a humpback's cerebral cortex too contains these neurons. If for some Sunday morning sun worship service at the beach, once sand-soothed and murmuring to ourselves that we are safe and good, we should stroll into the ocean sanctuary, put our heads one by one underwater, and surrender to the great prophet's sacred song. If we should be baptized in the sounds of his belly for 3 days and then spit out on the shore stinking but sanctified, we may at long last become both more godlike and more human and make love, not war, with our religion. Now I have a poem that was written for a poet. I won't say which one because it really could bring to mind a poet who is special to you. Someone that you think has an incredible gift, a gift that is almost that of a saint, a poet who can reach a multitude with his kindness and generosity and clarity. So this poem is called, They Will Call You a Saint. They will call you a saint. Look for you with antiquities under the arches of the basilica. Line up in the vestibule to offer themselves in service to your memory. Yes, a sainted poet. After all, you gave them your sacred words, showed wounds, sacrificed yourself even on altars, and they forgive you for it. The way you punctured their hearts and crept into their windows, kept them awake always with the literary cannon fire. Even now, their eyes are dilated for the love of you, their pillows damp with tears or sweat, hot faith, devotion. Oh, to be a witness in the sacristy. You've ensnared them, unawares. They can't go back to confession now. That's impossible. What they need, they cannot get from a priest. Compassion, protection, a personal Gothic revival. Here in the nave, they will hope to find you on your knees in prayer, in monk's robes, light from the clerestory falling on your holy face. You said you'd be here. You promised. Nonsense. Last night, I traced the headboard and the sheets with my restless hands. I wanted to touch you, but I wouldn't dare. You might say I set traps for saints and foxes, and the last thing you'd do is follow that scent and be persecuted for it. So I just came to lie down here on the ancient floor of the church in the midst of 100 candles and worship in my own way. Recite your stanzas, your lines of pain and penance, your righteous anger. Come if you want, my saint of flesh and bone. Come if you want, before morning. Well, we can hardly have a poetry reading without mentioning a poem by Billy Collins. Let's have Royal Aristocrat. My old typewriter used to make so much noise, I had to put a cushion of newspaper beneath it late at night so as not to wake the whole house. Even if I closed the study door and typed a few words at a time, the best way to work anyway, the clatter of keys was still so loud that the gray and yellow bird would wince in its cage. Some nights I could even see the moon frowning down through the winter trees. That was 20 years ago. Yet as I write this with my soft lead pencil, I can still hear that distinctive sound, like small arms fire across a border. One burst after another as my wife turned in her sleep. I was a single monkey trying to type the opening lines of my Hamlet, often doing nothing more than ironing pieces of paper in the platen, then wrinkling them into balls to flick into the wicker basket. Still, at least I was making noise, adding to the great secretarial din. That chorus of clacking and bells, thousands of desks receding into the past. And that was more than can be said for the mute rooms of furniture, the speechless salt and pepper shakers, and the tall, silent hedges surrounding the house. Such deep silence on those nights, just the sound of my typing, and a few stars singing a song their mother sang when they were mere babies in the sky. Going to run out of time soon, and I thought it might be nice to suggest a poetry exercise in case you're out there thinking, I'd like to write a poem sometime and I'd like for Tamara to read it on the radio. So here's what I want you to do. This exercise is from the book called Poem Crazy. It's a simple exercise. Buy yourself a notebook or a journal that suits your personality and keep it with you. In a journal, you can be self-centered and feel safe enough to write poems. It's never too late to start. Don't try to catch up by going back in your life. Start with now. This is the best advice I know for anyone who wants to be a poet. Start now. This music makes me feel like having a little poetry from Seamus Heaney. I sat in Ireland last year at the edge of Dunleary on a bench, and it was getting cold in the evening, and I sat in my sweater and read from this book by Seamus Heaney called North. One of the most magic days of my life. Here's the poem, Come to the Bower. My hands come, touched by sweet briar and tangled vetch, foraging past the burst gizzards of coin hoards, to where the dark-bowered queen, whom I unpin, is waiting. Out of the black maw of the peat, sharpened willow withdraws gently. I unwrap skins and see the pot of the skull, the damp tuck of each curl, reddish as a fox's brush, a mark of a gorget in the flesh of her throat, and spring water starts to rise around her. I reach past the riverbed's washed dream of gold to the bullion of her venous bone. Pilgrimage. We're all on some kind of a holy pilgrimage. So with the last poem I read in a few minutes, I'm going to put on my poet's robe and we'll head toward Canterbury or Lourdes together, telling stories all the way, reading our poems out loud. If you'll join me again next time, all you beautiful pilgrims, all you poets and bright stars, nuns and wives of Bath, millers, pardoners. I believe Raymond is waiting for us at the nearest tavern. And don't forget to listen to the birds that are always singing for you. Holy pilgrimage. They go to the river Ganges to purify themselves, the poet pilgrims. They go to Mecca and the Vatican, ask the Pope to bless their stanzas and couplets. They go to the pyramids of Giza and become polytheist. They go to Sodom and Gomorrah and feel guilty. They go to the Great Wall and the Wailing Wall, become warriors, then repent of wars. They pull down walls, they do not put them up. They do not close their hearts to pain, though sometimes they wish they could. They walk around in mandalas and offer mantras. May all beings be free from suffering. In San Miguel de Allende, church bells ring all day. Poets have gone there to live, one word for each bell maybe, or one act of love and selflessness. Neil Cassidy died there on the railroad tracks, trying to catch a train to heaven or somewhere else. Jack Kerouac went to listen to Big Sur give a poetry reading. Langston Hughes went to the lazy, laughing South with blood on its mouth. When poets are afraid, they go home to the ones who love them best or know them best, unless they run far, far away to not be loved or tamed. They give themselves new names. They miss everyone they ever loved, and from that ache, they keep the Dead Sea salty. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls at Spirit Plants Radio. Broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. See you next time. Don't forget to send me your poems at Facebook or at Twitter. That last tune you're listening to, and the one at the introduction, is Prohibition Blues from Purple Planet. It's a free background music website. Check it out sometime. You might find it useful. The web address is www.purple-planet.com. There's some great choices of music there. I also said I would mention where you could find more information about Marietje Garcia, and you can find her at facebook.com also. You'll look for Marichit, and the last name is Garcia. You'll be amazed at the beauty of what you'll find there. Also, don't forget to check us out at Friends of That Curious Love of Green. And while you're on the web, look around for Jane Berry's wonderful blog called That Curious Love of Green. She's got about 12,000 followers, but I'm sure she wouldn't mind having a few more. And you will be so glad when you see what Jane has been up to. She has a new novel coming out very soon. It's going to be fabulous. You want to put it on your reading list and get one as soon as it comes out.